Once again, concern about a second wave of COVID infections has put the equity and commodity markets on the defensives. Could the economy withstand another demand shock if another round of stay-at-home orders is advised? Heck, would most even pay attention if another round of stay-at-home orders is issued?
Live from the other side of the weekend via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Then it's President and CEO of LaSalle Economics, Dr. Vince Malanga. And right after the news, a quick weather update from Kirk Hins from BAMWX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Happy Monday morning, Davis Michelson. How are you, buddy?
Indeedly doodly. Happy Monday morning. Beautiful day so far today.
It really is. It really is. Little windy.
A little on the breezy side, yeah.
Yep. As many would say from yesterday, wow. It was a windy day yesterday. We've got wind again today. There's a lot of activity that needs to take place out in a lot of these soybean fields in particular this week and maybe as late as next week. But doggone, they got a lot of work to do in a short period of time. And a day like today isn't making it any easier.
No, it really isn't. Last night, I kind of finished up my, a little yard farming, a little this, a little that. Yeah. Got my grout project all finished up.
Nice.
Late Sunday afternoon, I was ready to have a campfire for the evening and kind of settle in. I found myself just sitting out there on the patio waiting for the wind to die down so I could light a fire.
Yeah,
we eventually
really
got her done,
did.
Though.
Did you?
We did light a fire, yeah.
You got a little one in there.
For better or worse.
Good deal. Yeah, Saturday was just cold.
Yeah, it was.
In Northeast Iowa. Yesterday, much more. Much better day, and today it's if you don't have to worry about putting chemical on the ground, it's a really nice day out there.
Sure.
So, concerns over a second wave of COVID infections is definitely in the marketplace today. The Dow is trading well off of session lows, but it's still 300 points lower. So, it's got the whole marketplace on edge. I'm looking forward to the conversation with Vince Malanga about what that might mean for us going forward in the farm economy. So, should be a good conversation. All right, man, what you got in the news?
Well, Chip, the U.S. economy does appear to be working on a V-shaped recovery. Mm-hmm. That's according to data reported by the Wall Street Journal. A range of private data shows economic activity has perked up since having bottomed in April. But, Chip, questions remain about future fiscal stimulus, a second wave of infections, and the amount of drag massive job losses will continue to have on that recovery. The White House Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow is upbeat and says the added $600 unemployment benefit, which some have argued disincentivizes employment, will end as planned on July 31st. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell will deliver his semi-annual economic testimony to Congress on Tuesday and Wednesday this week. Chip.
Yeah, that ought to make for a great conversation with Bub on Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, baby.
with Jay Powell delivering his testimony. Kudlow is going to be upbeat. There's more and more publicity about the $600 unemployment. That's an additional benefit.
Right.
An additional benefit being a disincentive to going back to work. It's getting a lot of attention right now. I don't know how true it is, but I think it is something that is being examined right now. Yeah.
Well, Chip, the European Union will begin lifting border controls today. This, as Russian President Vladimir Putin says Russia is emerging from the virus confidently while criticizing what he called political bickering in the United States, which he said have hamstrung President Trump's efforts to control the virus. Meanwhile, the CDC released new guidelines warning attending large gatherings still pose a significant health risk. In New York City, the number of people taking to the subway rose 25% over the last week. Starting to get something going here.
Slowly but surely, they are starting to get back to normal. That's one of the things that I want to talk with Vince about is what is the attitude in New York?
A resurgence of COVID cases in Beijing has prompted China to cancel an economic briefing scheduled for today. The National Bureau of Statistics says the press conference will not be held, but data regarding industrial output and retail sales in May and explanatory statements will be released. So they're not going to have the meeting itself, but we'll still get the data out of that meeting. It should be interesting.
Good deal. Good deal. Okay. Yep.
And speaking about a flurry of small refinery exemptions that have been submitted to EPA for prior compliance years, Texas Senator Ted Cruz said EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler fully understands the damage the rising cost of renewable identification numbers, or RINs, have on small refineries. Those requests are seen as a way for refiners to qualify to file for SREs based on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruling earlier this year that invalidated three SREs granted for the 2016 compliance year. I don't even know what that means. Chip?
You know, if the RINs are too expensive, then just blend.
Right.
just blend. I mean, ethanol right now is $1.12, okay? At E10, that means 11.2, 11.3 cents per gallon of fuel that you're putting in the pump. Just blend. It's the cheapest way to meet your obligations. Jeez. Yep.
Well, Chip, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals has inquired why the EPA allowed continued use of dicamba on soybeans and cotton after the court ruled to vacate registrations. On Friday, the 9th Circuit Court ordered EPA to respond by Tuesday on its handling of the court's June 3 order. EPA has said farmers can continue to use dicamba they already have purchased through July 31st. 9th Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea where this is going to end up. I have no idea why the Ninth Circuit Court should be making decisions about what farmers are doing in Iowa, Illinois, Arkansas, Mississippi. I don't understand the whole process. But anyway, we'll continue to keep you updated on what's going on there with the dicamba. Okay, thanks, Davis. Let's get an update on the weather. Kirk Hands, meteorologist, BAMWX.com, joins us right now. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm doing super, sir. How are you?
Doing just fine. Okay, there's some differences in the forecast for this weekend, man. What?
Oh, yeah.
And it's split between the Euros and the GFS. What gives?
It is, yeah. The European, now, the similarities are this. But they both have pretty widespread rain in, like, eastern Nebraska and Iowa, southern Minnesota, kind of that area. Now, the difference is the GFS is much more soaked in, like, Kansas and Missouri and eastern Colorado and here, even in the Ohio Valley. So the only difference here is that the GFS is just like how it always is, just soaked kind of everywhere. So there are some similarities, but I would say there's a lot more differences in terms of the widespread nature of things.
Okay, but those West Corn Belt rains look pretty good for this weekend, don't they?
I would say that is one of the bigger risks because obviously everybody knows how currently really dry and really warm we are out there right now. I would say if there's any big risk to that, it would be watching the bust potential out there. Bust potential meaning that given the current conditions that things may not produce as much as the models, especially the GFS American model, would suggest. So I would say that's a potential to end up drier, as well as some of those areas that are dry too, and across Kansas and Missouri, and even we've gotten really locally dry in the Ohio Valley as well. I would say that is the secondary bust potential as well. So it's still a fluid situation, but there are definitely some differences.
Hey, Kirk, real quick, what's the wind situation between now and the weekend?
Yeah. Fortunately, we do calm those winds down. So I would say that is a good benefit too.
Absolutely. Kirk, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Appreciate it, sir. Have a good day.
You too. You too. Have a good week. That is Kirk Hands, meteorologist, BAMWX.com. All right. When we come back, it's Monday. That means we've got Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, coming up next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Well, your part of the world. Let's have a conversation right now with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing today?
Doing just dandy, just dandy. All right. Let's jump right into the conversation here because there is one really special combine that I want to make sure that we have time to talk about on today's show. But let's start with the pick of the week. What do you got?
Yeah, let's go for some loader tractors. On June 4th out in Recluse, Wyoming, which I love the name of that town. I sort of wish I could live in Recluse, Wyoming. But there was a 2014 John Deere 6140D. 956 hours on mechanical front, sold with the John Deere H310 loader, super sharp rig, brought 58.25, which that's very strong price. Okay. And it kind of rang a bell. It's like, oh, I think I've seen another one recently. And I got looking, actually two other 6140Ds sold very high the past 2 months. One was a 15 model with only 312 hours, also with a loader that brought 58.5. Our friends at Big Iron had that sale April 29th. That was in from Valley, Nebraska. And then even higher, another 15 model with 1,627 hours mechanical front with a loader in Coombe, North Dakota. And I think it was an online farm auction by the Steffes Group April 8th. But that thing went for 61.5, which that's the second highest auction price in 3 years on a 6140D. So, again, three of them in short order. Nice ones, again, shows you the demand there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it shows you the demand coming that we continue to see come out of some of these livestock areas, right? I mean, the loader tractor, I'm sure that we're talking about, that's a hay-hauling son of a gun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Gets the job done, you know, in that 150-horse range, give or take. And, again, when we see nice ones all across the board, even coming out of dairy country with all the stress the past, you know, 18 months plus, when they're good shape like this one in Wyoming at 58.25, are pretty strong.
Right, right. Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Let's move up the scale here a little bit because there's a new item that came in on machinerypete.com. I want to hear about this one, that Steiger.
Yeah, it just came in, the other night. A guy reached out to me from Lincoln, Illinois, Todd Irwin, and he said, Pete, I got to move this tractor. And I told him how to list it on our website, and he got that done. And we posted it on Facebook and Twitter. It's getting a lot of interest. It's a 1984 Steiger Cougar 4 CM250, which these Steigers, we don't, just don't see a ton of them around. This one's a solid one, 73, 35 hours on it. But I was intrigued by Todd's comment in the description. He said, motivated seller. He's got it priced at $20,000. It looks like a nice rig. So if you're interested in an 84 Steiger Cougar 4, just go to machinerypete.com. Check it out. $20,000. Todd in Lincoln, Illinois is looking to move it.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I tell you what, when you're looking to buy, the thing that you love to hear is motivated seller.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of invites, it invites a conversation, right? How motivated are you? But again, priced pretty aggressively there, I think, for, a hard-to-find, nice, solid Cougar 4 like that. So,
$20,000 for 250 horsepower is some cheap horsepower.
Well, that's what people say anywhere around the country, Chip. If it's at auction or a situation like this for sale by owner, you're buying horsepower and $20,000, it's not a bad deal for sure.
Yeah, all right. Talking about Illinois, you going to make your way over there later this week?
Well, it's interesting. I actually won't be there, but we're filming an auction for our TV show. It's this Friday. It's June 19th. Folks, you've probably heard about the sale. Sullivan Auctioneers is having it. It's an online-only farm estate sale in Morris, Illinois, just, southwest of Chicago a little bit. Yeah. For Gemini Farms, the owner, Jim Bedeker. Jim was an amazing guy. He wasn't that old when he passed, but he built an amazing company called A&R Logistics, and he was one of the, basically, my uneducated way of describing it is a specialized bulk plastic hauler. all over the country. He had hundreds of rigs, built an amazing business. But at his heart, I think Jim grew up on a farm. When we were talking to the folks he worked with, I went down a couple weeks ago to look at the equipment. And I tell you what, this equipment, folks, incredible. Just to give you a few highlights. 2018 model John Deere 9620RX, 623 hours. An 11 model 9630T on tracks, under 2,800 hours. A tractor like we just talked about, a 14 model 6150R mechanical front, 1,000 hours with a loader. Combine, how about a 2018 S780, 364 SEP hours. How about this sprayer? Wow. 2017 Hagee STS-12 with 389 hours. Planter, 2018 John Deere DB60, 36-row, 20-inch, 4,000 acres on it. Two of the nicest-looking Peterbilts I've ever seen, a pair of 04 379s, black, just sweet. And then he's got a 18 Kubota SVL95-2 skid steer with 134 hours on it. So we're going to film this online auction. I think Dan Sullivan and I, we're going to film kind of our reaction as the pieces begin to sell online. So it should make for a fun, machine repeat episodes on the TV show.
Dude, that list of equipment that you rattled off there, that is like exactly what we've been talking about that is in the highest demand out in the used equipment market. Yep. Late model, low hour, but you don't have to pay new price.
Yeah, that's it. And there's a ton of it. And Jim had the most amazing horse trailer. You want to see an amazing horse trailer, folks? Go to Sullivan Auctioneers. Check out the sale June 19th. I can't even really describe it. It's unbelievable. Kind of had a horse farm at his place in Morris there. And again, Jim was a farmer at heart. And yeah, his equipment is just, it's just gorgeous.
Wow. Wow. This sounds like it is a must-see event. Is what that certainly sounds like. Wow. Okay. Speaking of must-see events, dude, I don't know where you find this stuff to blog about, but when you start blogging about a flying combine, a jumping combine, you're reaching deep.
Yeah, it's amazing. We're going to drop a new podcast, our Machine Repeat podcast episode. Not sure if it's coming out today, Monday, or tomorrow, Tuesday, but it'll be on the flying combine, the Silver Bullet. And if you saw that blog you referenced, Chip, I just wrote last week, and I had actually written one 2 years ago on this thing. I didn't remember it, but folks sent me pictures. And this combine, there was a couple of Gail and Ernie Brookins up around Fargo, I think, that made this thing. I believe out of like a dragster chassis and made it kind of look like a gleaner. It said Silver Bullet on it, and they would jump over vintage antique cars at like regional fairs and shows. And it was featured, a lot of people remember it from the movie The Golden Harvest with Wayne Rogers from MASH. Wayne Rogers, that was Hawkeye's buddy, I think, right?
Yeah.
And Earl Holliman from the old show Policewoman with Angie Dickinson. My mom, I was a little kid, my mom never let me watch Policewoman. But anyway. The
Trapper.
Silver Bullet. Trapper, yes, Trapper.
Yeah.
There you go. But I'm going to interview Gail, and amazing history on this thing. They built their own custom rig to haul it around the country. And the story, the blog, the people commenting, like, I saw that thing when I was a kid. So I can't wait to get that out and have people enjoy the story.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a fascinating story. And the picture in the blog, it looks like something that shouldn't be possible or happening. It kind of, you know, it's kind of like a bumblebee flying. Aerodynamically, it's not supposed to happen, but it does all the time.
It looks like a gleaner with Silver Bullet on the side flying through the air over an antique car. It's like your brain can't compute it, but it happened 35 years ago.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. All right, real quick, take us up to North Dakota. What wasn't there an auction up there recently?
Yeah, I blogged about it. It was a sale last Thursday, Chip, in Leeds, North Dakota. Our friends at Dakota Auctioneers sold a 1987 Case H 3594, which don't see many of those around, mechanical front. Nice rig, 7,255 hours. Went for $29,000 last Thursday. And that is the fourth highest, tied for the fourth highest price in the last 10 and a half years on a $35.94. So again, if a tractor is solid, good shape like that, it's ringing the bell. Price, the money's there.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Very cool. It's always fun to talk with you, Greg. Cannot wait to see this blog about the Silver Bullet. That's going to be a lot of fun and to hear that podcast. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Hey, have a good week, Chip.
All right. Thanks so much. That is Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat. Just go to machinerepeat.com and get all the latest listings of the used machinery out there. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in just a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst Jeff Wilson. How are you doing this morning, Jeff?
Great, Chip. How are you this morning?
I'm okay, except we've got these markets on the defensive, don't we?
Yeah, but it could have been worse, I think, given what transpired last night in the world equity markets. This whole fear of a second round of the COVID-19 starting to spread, it put the stock markets down sharply, but they're coming back now a little bit. And then on the beans, they found some underlying support because we got another announcement of 390,000 tons of beans sold to China for new crop delivery. So right. They've been buying consistently now for 3 weeks. And look, if they can continue to buy on a weekly basis and that kind of a quantity, that would be a very good sign for the beans to catch a bid.
Yeah, that new crop sales total going out to China is starting to look fairly impressive, isn't it?
It's getting to that point. It's not quite there yet.
Right.
But if we can continue to see those kind of quantities in the 300,000 to 600,000, 700,000 per week, then yes, if we can get it over the next month, then we'll be looking at something very attractive. You know, the other story right now is the weather is not threatening at this point in time, but it's not. There's no bell ringing that everything is okay, because there's enough disagreement about the forecast in the next week that we may be finding a lack of new selling interest at these kind of prices.
Yeah, we just talked with Kirk Hans from BAMWX, and he said, watch that bust potential on the rain forecast for the Western Belt. Really important to watch there. Real quick, we've got some mixed trade going in live cattle. We've got some lower values in feeder cattle and mixed trade in the lean hog market without a lot of activity. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you later. That is Jeff Wilson, Pro Farmer Senior Market Analyst on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Davis, you know what?
Yes. What?
If this radio / inputs monitor / landowner thing doesn't work out for you,
yes,
I think there may be a future for you in piloting flying combines.
Piloting flying combines, you say?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, get out there on the fair tour again and get after it, man. Yeah.
Is there something you're trying to tell me right now, Chip?
No.
Do
you're okay,
to
bud.
Do this on
hey,
the
relax,
air?
Relax.
Is
again.
This where you want to do this?
We're good. It's all good. All okay, right, man. Chip. Let's get into this conversation with Vince Malanga, president of LaSalle Economics out of New York. Vince, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, likewise, Chip. Haven't talked to you in a while.
That's right. How's things in New York? What's the attitude? Is the comeback going to happen?
Well, you know, we're in the reopening process. So far, it's been going smoothly but uneventfully. I wouldn't say everybody's jumping for joy. You know, it's going to be tentative. People are worried. People are scared. And, you know, it's going to be like that everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, The eyes of the nation are on what is happening in New York, in New Jersey, with reopening in New Jersey today as well. And I think the whole country is kind of looking over there for an indication of how willing consumers are going to be to step out and travel again, spend again, well, go out to dinner again.
The entire Northeast got hit awfully hard early on, but the numbers have improved dramatically over the past month, 6 weeks. Now we're seeing other parts of the country emerge as hot spots, and so naturally there's some concern about that. Overall, for the U.S. as a whole, things seem to have leveled off. But it's going to take a while. We're going to have a few months where the data is going to look like a real snapback. But then I think reality is going to strike, and things are going to taper off, and it's going to be a long journey.
All right. So your attitude is that Larry Kudlow may be a bit optimistic.
Well, I think as we look out over the next 3 or 4 months, I think the data are going to look like a nice snapback is unfolding. It's beyond that that becomes a concern. Now, we're going to get more fiscal action. The Fed is on our side. And the one thing that I will say is positive is that every day we are one day closer to a therapy and a vaccine.
Yep.
And, of course, the sooner those events are confirmed or are successful, the sooner I think attitudes will change markedly for the better.
Okay. What happens if we get to today's June 15? What happens if we get to July 15 and there's an increase in cases in New York and there's an increase in cases in New Jersey? Do we shut down again?
No, the shutdown is off the table. I think everybody is expecting the case numbers to go up for various reasons. Number one, there's a lot more testing going on. Number two, of course, we had all these protests and everything, and there were large crowds, and they weren't really socially distant. And so I think we're anticipating a pickup in cases. I would say it's the degree that matters and the severity that matters. You know, it's okay if we get an increase in the number of cases. I think what's to be watched is the number of hospitalizations. To the extent that the protesters, by and large, were sort of young, maybe their immune systems are better, and so therefore the results will be more favorable. But we'll have to see. We're all dealing with the unknown here, and all you can do is monitor it on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. Address the willingness of most workers to go back to work, Vince. What do you think that level of willingness is?
Well, I think there's a high level of willingness of workers to go back to work. I think the question is, are the jobs going to be available for all those workers to go back? You know, brick and mortar retail has gotten hit really hard. Restaurants, bars, the travel and leisure sector. You know, you're talking about 25% of the economy. And a lot of those jobs are not going to come back. Some will, but, you know, if what we used to think of as 100% of capacity is now 50% of capacity, well, that's necessarily going to imply fewer workers. And so, therefore, some of those jobs and a portion of those jobs are going to be permanently lost. And we're going to have to deal with that.
Okay. So address the $600 in additional benefits. Is that disincentive to go back to work?
I tell you, that program expires at the end of July.
Yep.
The additional $600 has definitely been a benefit to those eligible for it. Yeah, I think there is some disincentive there. But by removing it, you know, the fact is you're harming those that need it. And the question is, what's the trade-off? I suspect that the $600 excess they'll get away from that. They'll let it expire on July 31st, and maybe put something else in its place. I'm not quite sure what it is. The idea of a cash bonus for those who go back to work sounds appealing, but you also have to be concerned about those who want to go back to work but can't.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. And what you were also explaining there, Vince, is that some of these jobs just aren't coming back. Well, if you stay on unemployment because there's a $600 additional and decide, no, you know what, I'm going to push it back. If you don't go back when they call you back, that job might not be there when you want it.
Right.
Yeah.
No question about it. And of course, the longer you're sort of receiving that payment and creating that disincentive to work, you then tend to drop out of the labor force.
Yep.
You're discouraged from taking on additional training or new training. And so there are a lot of trade-offs involved in this. It's not an easy, there's no easy solution.
So what does the employment picture look like 6 months from now?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen the worst of it. Yep. Jobs are going to come back, but I think jobs are going to come back more slowly than we like. Some of those workers who have been laid off will find jobs as contact tracers, et cetera. In the long run, there'll be new industries and new job opportunities. But if we're looking out 6 months, we're still going to be faced with double-digit unemployment.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you know what I'm going to do to you next. Bring it around to the farm economy, Vince. What does all of this mean for ag commodities going forward?
Well, you know, I don't think there's any question but that the trend toward globalization was on its way toward being reversed over the past couple of years, and this is just another event that's going to continue to reverse the trend toward globalization. There's going to be a lot more insularity. There's going to be less transatlantic, transcontinental travel, et cetera, and there's going to be more self-sufficiency. I think that's going to be a trend that's going to endure. That by itself would hurt agriculture. Now, in the process, though, I think we're going to see supply chains reconfigured, and there's probably going to be more production that was being done outside the country turned toward the country. And so in that respect, that's an employment benefit to that and an income benefit to that. I think on balance, the events that we've seen over the past 6 months are a lingering negative for the farm economy, but it's not something that can't be handled.
Okay. Yeah, BP's projections, certainly not good news for fuel use or the ethanol industry, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, demand is going to come back. It's already come back off its lows. There is a dramatic decline in drilling activity going on all over the world. And, you know, the price of oil is set at the last barrel. And we get a positive surprise. For example, if we wake up 3 months from now and we've got a vaccine and it looks effective and it's being widely distributed, economic confidence is going to be restored. The demand side of the global economy is going to come back. The demand for oil is going to come back a lot faster than the supply can meet it. But there's a lot of excess capacity out there in the world, and so, you know, it's hard for me to see the price of oil getting above $50 for an awfully long time.
All right. Jay Powell's on the Hill this week in his testimony. Is he going to say anything that surprises Congress?
No, I think he's going to deliver the same message that he's been delivering. We're in a recovery. The recovery is going to be slow. There's going to be a lot of pain still to linger as the patient recovers, but the Fed is going to be there and he's going to urge the Congress toward more fiscal stimulus.
All right. Vince, it's always good to talk with you, man. Nobody shoots it straighter than you do. Thanks, man.
Okay, Chip, anytime. You bet.
Absolutely. That is Dr. Vince Malanga, the president of LaSalle Economics. Like I said, man, nobody shoots straighter on the economy than Vince does. When we come back, Davis and I are going to put a wrap on today's and this week's first hour of AgriTalk. We'll take a closer look at some of those weather forecasts coming up next here on AgriTalk.
Mm-hmm. AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me.
Say, Chip, something Dr. Malanga said, I had one more quick news story that we didn't have time for. Could I read that to you now?
Absolutely.
Well, U.S. crude oil futures posted their first weekly decline, breaking a seven-week streak of higher values last week. Concerns about a second wave of infections in some states threatens to derail the burgeoning recovery. Meanwhile, here we go. The Baker Hughes active U.S. rig count fell to its lowest level since 2009.
Right. Okay. So that gets us back to what Vince was saying. If all of the sudden either the therapeutics or the vaccine is here, and we do get that quick recovery, the recovery in fuel demand will come faster than the ability of those pumping will be able to ramp back up.
Yes.
And that's when you had better watch out to the upside in this crude oil market. We've seen, can I say it, unprecedented volatility in crude oil futures already. It will continue if something like that would happen. If demand starts to outpace ability to produce.
Yep. The downside gap from, looks like March 9, is still half open, by the way. Mm-hmm. We penetrated into it, topped out right around 40, but it looks like the top end of that gap is right at 42 even. That's in the July WTI. So I don't know if that does anything. You know, Vince was pretty clear. He doesn't see $50 crude for quite a while.
Right. Well, and either does BP. I made mention of BP in the question to Vince, and I put it out there, and I remembered that we hadn't even talked about it to this point. BP will write off $17.5 billion of assets after revising long-term energy price forecasts. The company is saying that coronavirus will have a lasting impact on the global economy and energy demand, and sees the pandemic only accelerating a global shift toward cleaner fuels.
Yeah. Didn't that item also say 20 to 30% lower fuel costs moving forward?
Company sees oil and gas being about 20% to 30% cheaper than before in the coming decades, and expects the cost of carbon emissions to be more than twice as high, both threats to the longstanding dividend.
Yep.
Okay. So, BP sees this as a major, major shift in how we fuel the vehicles in not only in the U.S. but in the world, okay, toward those cleaner fuels. And we had a conversation, you know, I talked about it a couple of times, had a webinar last week on the future of American ethanol. Dan Bossi from Ag Resource, Doug Bervin from POET, Dr. Andy Randolph from ECR, and then Jeff Cooper from the Renewable Fuels Association. They all had excellent input. You can find, again, just Google Farm Country Update, and it will take you to the site where you can listen to that webinar again. It was absolutely outstanding. And we talked about one of the themes that I've been covering on, you know, since the whole thing started on AgriTalk, is pulling the future forward. Well, cleaner, you know, with the experience and the pollution measurements that we are taking now with much less travel, there is a greater understanding of just how much, you know, fossil fuels are responsible for out there. So if we can continue the push towards some of the higher blends of ethanol and the cleaner burning fuels and get the engine makers behind it, like Dr. Randolph was talking about, all of a sudden, we might have an opportunity in here, dude.
Yeah, and so, I like the sound of that.
Absolutely.
The stimulus checks, when we started the conversation about the $600 additional benefits being a disincentive to return to work, at the start of the show, I said, you know, I want to find out from Vince exactly what he thinks of that. He didn't think that it's much of a disincentive, especially when you consider if you don't go back to work now, when they call you back, is that job going to be there for you when you want to return to the workforce? In other words, right, when that $600 of additional incentives is up. That's why we're close enough to it now, Davis. If the job is available to you and they want you to take it, by golly, you better take it, because we're still talking about double-digit unemployment rates.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that disincentive argument is gone.
My homie up in Wisconsin, my best friend Trav, he's mm-hmm. he's back at work for the first day today. It's his first day back, and he was privy to those extended benefits, but he was also very anxious to get back to work, and part of it was to secure his position.
I think that's the majority of the vast majority of workers will have that attitude, that hey, you know what, let's get back to work, let's make it happen. Let's make it happen. The split decision that we talked about with Kirk Hinz from BAMWX, the split forecast that is out there right now. When you take a look at, I was watching the National Weather Service 6-10 day outlook all weekend, and to see the updates over the weekend, they've got those above normal rains expected in the southern areas, in the eastern area of the Corn Belt, with normal to below normal precipitation for June 20th through the 24th in the western and northwest production areas. Above normal temperatures are expected in the east, normal to below normal in those drier areas. That's for that June 20th through the 24th period. So kind of a split decision there, man. We'll talk more about that and follow the update to the forecast when we get it this afternoon. And speaking of this afternoon, I've already had an email conversation with this afternoon's guest, Andrew Jackson from Hedgers. And I'm telling you, he's got a heck of a list put together for things that he wants to talk about this afternoon. So you got to come back for that.